What did he do before that?
Okay.
He was in Stratton.
All right. Good morning, gentlemen. If I were to ask you, what was the biggest misconception in American history? Got a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge here. We'll not say American history. What was the biggest misconception in world history?
That the world was flat.
That's fair to say. World was flat. Everyone assumed that it was not flat and flat and not round, although actually I was looking into this because I was wondering. And apparently the machlokas between Columbus and Queen Isabella was not whether or not the world was flat. He wasn't saying, oh, it's round, and she wasn't saying it was flat. Some people actually agreed that it was round. Their machlokas was how far away the ocean, there was no name for it, the ocean that he was going to cross was going to be. That, and she thought it was going to be much farther, he'd never make it, and he said, no, it's actually much closer, and I'm going to make it. He was also wrong, but I guess it worked out in the end, and he ended up discovering America. Thank you, Columbus. But I think it's fair to say that if you ask most of us, the biggest fallacy, the biggest misconception in world history is that the world was flat. What if I were to tell you that I don't think that's the biggest one? I don't think that the biggest mistake, biggest misconception that has ever existed was that the world's flat. In fact, something entirely different. So if I were to ask you, in the middle of the night, I woke you up, shook you awake, 3 in the morning, and said, how many days did it take to create the world? What would you tell me?
6.
I think that's
6 and a slight fraction.
And a slight fraction? Why? Because you cheated and opened us up?
No, I mean, because...
Because God created...
Shabbos.
God created Shabbos, and he did... Well, so that's I think, is a Rashi, that... That God started Shabbos at like that exact moment when Shabbos needed to be started. But yes, so 6 days? Anyone protesting? Anyone think that it's not 6 days? I think if you ask most people in the world whether they believe that God created the world, whether they believe in this whole Genesis story, I think everyone would tell you that as far as we're concerned, as far as the Torah is concerned, it took God 6 days to create the world. Fair enough?
Okay.
What? The Russians would say really everything was created on day 1, and then things were activated as...
Fair enough. Maybe even less. What if I were to tell you that I think that's totally false? I think that's our biggest misconception. I don't think that the world was created in 6 days. I don't think it was created in 1 day. I think it took 8 days. Now, you may look at me like I'm crazy. Maybe you look at me like I'm a heretic. Boom. But... I'm not convinced that I'm a heretic. One, because I don't think I like to think of myself as being a heretic. Actually, I kind of do. It's kind of fun. But if you look at the Gemara in Sukkim, source 1, top of the page, what does it tell us? Very, very simply, very, very straightforward. Ein mevarkin ala or el b'motzai Shabbos. We make a bracha on fire on Saturday night. Why? Plain and simple. Hoil utchilas priyaso hu. Because that's when it was created. Because fire was created on Motzai Shabbos. Now, fire is created on Motzai Shabbos. How many days are we working with here? We got 6 days of creation, Shabbos, and then a little bit. Then Saturday night. We're in day 8 already. And so this whole Kisheshes Yom Masah Hashem Samayim Ves Aretz is not true. It's inaccurate.
But wasn't fire part of East and Samayim? East and Samayim, East Samayim.
Ah, okay.
According to one Medrash, at least.
So I was talking to someone about this, and so yes, there's the Medrash about how fire existed in some Shemayim context. There's also you could argue that what's the sun made out of? Fire, for all intents and purposes, and so that existed. But we're being told here that Tchilas Briyaso Hu is that it was created on Saturday night. It's created on the 8th day. And so whether you want to talk about it being actualized, because practically the sun is off limits to us, that we can't access it, and there are some people who you ask them, hey, you have change for a 5? You're like, I have a whole stack of 1s. Like, great, can I have change for a 5? Like, oh, no, it's at home. That wasn't helpful. I didn't need to know that. The sun existed, the fire existed in some context, maybe in Shemai, maybe in space, but... fire, in a practical sense, in this world, didn't exist. By the way, I know that a few of us like to take notes, and so you may notice, and maybe I'm the only one who notices or cares, but I took off the border that I usually had so that I wouldn't get in the way of notes. And if we like this at the end, you can let me know, and maybe this will be our new format. I like the border, but I think that note-taking-wise, this is easier. And so the question that we want to try and understand is why do we talk about God creating the world in 6 days when in fact it seems like it was eight? Why make Shabbos Motzei Shabbos? What's going on here? Why not make fire on Friday? Why wait till Saturday night? So we're going to provide basically two answers. The first from Murray Harabi, Rav Nevensel, chief rabbi of the Old City, who gets quoted very, very frequently. Whenever I'm around, because he's my rabbi. And here this is a more halakhic approach, and so our halakhically minded people can appreciate it. And it goes as follows. Where do we know the 39 malachos from? You know, these 39 activities that we don't perform on Shabbos. Yeah, so from the Mishkan, Parshas Vayakhel, it starts out talking about Shabbos and then jumps right into the building of the Mishkan. And how does it talk about Shabbos? What's the line that's used? You should not pass a fire through. You should not make a fire on Shabbos. And from that connection, we know that the actions performed in the Mishkan are going to be prohibited on Shabbos. And even though they're not written anywhere in the Torah, the only prohibited action on Shabbos that's written is that you're not supposed to have a fire. And so, if we look at the Gemara Masechet Shabbos, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Nelson. Because if you look at the arrow, Shmuel is following the shita of the town of Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi says, you know, Shmuel Savarla Rabbi Yossi to Amar, Havara Lelav Yatzas. This pasuk, Lo Savara Ish B'Kol Moshe V'Zeim B'Yom HaShabbos. What is that coming to teach us? Because there's one out of the 39 activities that's made specific. And so as far as Rabbi Yossi and as far as Shmuel is concerned, Havara, lighting a fire, is what we call a chiyuv lav, and if it's a lav, that means that if you violate it, it's a lesser punishment as opposed to the other prohibited Shabbos activities, which is basically as stringent as it gets. You get skila, you get stoned, and you can get karis. Your soul will be cut off from the Jewish people, or whatever else karis means. Maybe one day we'll explore karis. It's a fascinating subject. And so Rabbi Nassan says, no, that's a ridiculous notion. Havara, lighting a fire on Shabbos, is not a different punishment. Plain and simply, Rabbi Nassan says on the second to last line, Rabbi Nassan Omer lechalek yatzas. No. There's one out of the 39 listed because it wants to teach you that if you violate more than one of these 39 activities, then you'll be punished for each and every one of them. So how do you get punished if you're getting killed? You can only get killed once, but in a more hopeful sense. If you're violating Shabbos, then we assume that you're doing it accidentally and not on purpose. And so if you violate a Peshogeg by accident, then you're going to have to bring a Karban Chatas for each and every one of those prohibited activities. And so if I'm writing, and I'm baking, and I'm winnowing, and I'm separating, then I'm going to have to bring five different Karban Chatas. And so that's what Rabbi Nassan says. We have one that stands out to understand that it's not Shabbos as a whole. Shabbos isn't the sum of 39 parts, but keeping Shabbos is 39 really different things that you could be obligated for. In one Shabbos you can get nailed for 39 different karbanos. That's a lot of karbanos. But the question that Rav Nevensel addresses is this is kind of funny, because Rabbi Nassan's telling us that it's in order to differentiate the 39 malachos, but Rabbi Yossi thinks that fire is not as chamor, not as stringent, not as bad of a Shabbos violation as some of the other 39 activities. Now let me ask you, if we think about these 39 activities, when you're teaching people about Shabbos, there are some of them that are like, yeah, we don't cook on Shabbos. People are like, oh, okay, fine, I totally hear that. And like, yeah, we don't write on Shabbos. Okay, I can appreciate that. And they say, we don't do borer on Shabbos. And they say, what's borer? Well, if you don't like tomatoes, and you're having a salad that has tomatoes in it, you can't pick the tomato out of the salad and put it on put it away, because that is separating the bad from the good, and we don't do that on Shabbos. And if someone has never heard of Hilchos Shabbos before, they're going to look at you like you're a crazy person. No? You know, a lot of Shabbos is in vogue today because, you know, we have all these things about disconnecting and turning your phones off and the technology not working all the time. And so for thousands of years, everyone looked at the Jews like they were so crazy that they're not going to work on a Saturday, and we got to work every day because we have to be in the field, we have to be doing what we're doing. Nowadays, everyone's like, oh, those Jews, they have such a good idea with this whole Shabbos thing. We should all be doing Shabbos. But if you tell them that part of keeping Shabbos is not just spending time with your family and you know, sleeping a little bit more and not using your phone, but it's also not taking the tomatoes out of your salad, to look at you like you're nuts. So Borer, if I take that tomato out of my salad and put it away, now there are ways of doing that, if anyone's interested. If someone else at the table likes tomatoes, my wife likes tomatoes and I don't, and so I just take the tomatoes out, put them on a plate or put them on her plate, she eats them, and then it's not Borer because I'm taking positive from positive. That's a quick halachic interlude. And now it's not a bad thing, and she gets very happy, and I'm very happy. Baruch Hashem, Shalom on Yisrael. We're a perfect match. But Borer is not so... What am I doing in Borer? I'll give you a better one, because maybe in some, you know, some Gemara sense, Borer does make sense. How about the malacha of Hotza'ah? Hotza'ah is very simple. You can't go from the public domain. I can't be holding at my keys. I can't be holding a needle, a tiny little walk from my house into the public domain. Nowadays, that's very, very uncommon that you'll have a public domain, although I think Avraham Soloveitchik would argue that in Chicago we have one. But if I were to walk from a Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, I have violated the Shabbos. I have to burn Karma Chatas. If I do it with a warning, with witnesses, I will be put to death for taking that little needle and walking 4 feet from inside to outside. Or if I'm already outside, four amot. That's a Shabbos violation. So now I've given you two out of the 39 that are very much a part of our Shabbos observance. But if you were to think about a creative activity, you're thinking about keeping Shabbos, are those so bad? Are those really worthy of getting, of being cut off from the Jewish people, of getting skila? When you contrast it with fire, which is the source of light, which is the source of heat, which is how people were kept safe. Fire, which is chemically changing whatever it's touching. Where nothing will be the same once fire has touched it. Whereas halakha, as Hotzah, the Gemara calls a malakha grua. Yeah, it's a malakha, it's a prohibited activity on Shabbos, but it's like a nebuch one. There was one Purim where Rav Yitzhak Cohen, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, was a very, very, very holy man. They say he defeated his Yetzer Hara, whatever that means, but he no longer has one. His sons were with him, and it was Purim, so they were getting into the Purim spirit, so they were getting very emotional. And that year, the Yeshiva was learning Shabbos, and the sons are crying and crying. They're like, Abba, I don't want to be a Malacha Grua, which doesn't really make any sense, but I don't want to be this like Nebuch Malacha. I guess I want to be a full-fledged, you know, real strong violation of Shabbos. But we have these activities that are prohibited on Shabbos, and fire is the one that's getting a lav. That's just like, oh, that was a bad thing to do. You're gonna get hit a few times. Why aren't you being cut off from the Jewish people? That's a kishmak Malacha. That's a Nevin Sal's question. What's the hava mean? Where is Rabbi Yossi coming from? What's his thought process? And now, this is quoting from Rav Nevin Sal, actually in his Rosh Hashanah Sefer, and in it he's describing a few of the ideas that we're going to share. This is sort of the inspiration for where this year came from today. But I highly recommend his Sefer Rosh Hashanah, Yushalam B'Moadeh. I should have brought a copy so everyone can see what it looks like. They're beautifully colored. A lot of Rav Nevin Sal's Sefer are beautifully colored. But Rav Nevin Sal says at the bottom of page 1, V'talking, Shekamur Hare Ha'esh Lo Nivrad Motzei Shabbos. We know the fire was not created until Motzei Shabbos. Source 1. Nimsa She Mimalacha Zu Lo Shabbos Hashem Shabbos Harishona. And so when God rests after 6 days of creation on Shabbos, on that seventh day, V'ein Hi Chelet Mibriyas Sheshes Mibriyas. So he wasn't resting from making fire, because fire wasn't at play here. It wasn't part of the world. Umikavon Shishvi Sasso Mimilakos Peshabbos. He rested from all these activities that existed, and maybe we learn them from the Mishkan, but all of those activities that we don't perform on Shabbos existed from the 6 days of creation. But fire was not, and since this one activity was left behind, it was not performed, he os, it's a sign. Al kach, shakadosh baruch hu bares olamo b'shesh yimei breishis, that God created the world in 6 days. Lachain, shonahi hashvisa mimelachas havara, v'shonos hein hilchoseah. Shabbos wasn't there. The prohibited activities on Shabbos, those other 38 activities, all existed from the 6 days of creation. So God rested from those activities. God didn't rest that first Shabbos from creating fire, because fire had not been created. That make sense?
Not sure.
We may learn our malachos from the Mishkan, but God learned the malachos from the things that he did when creating the world. And so when God rested on Friday, on Friday night, and looked back at everything he'd done, he said, oh, look at those 38 creative activities that I did this past week. Oh, what a good day, what a good week. And what's one of the things that he did not do over the course of that time? He never lit a fire. He never made fire. And so fire eventually does get created, but that first Shabbos doesn't care about fire, because fire wasn't a thing. Fire wasn't at the party. It didn't exist. And so violating the malach of Havara of lighting a fire on Shabbos is not as big of a deal as the other activities, because it was not one of the essential activities for creating the world in that initial 6 days. Cool idea, huh? That's how Rav Nevinson looks at it, and that's really our first answer. He proves it in Vayechulu, so I pointed out that if we look at Vayechulu, which we're going to say three times in the next 12 hours, yeah, that we're going to say it in our Shilin Shmoneh Esrei, we're going to say it publicly in Shul, and then we're going to say it in Kiddush, all about how and what's the theme of Vayechulu, God created the world in.
We're also
going to
say it in
Okay. Yeah, well, we said 12 hours, and hopefully we're past that in Shnayim Mikra, but if not, okay, some people do it on Friday night, that's fair. But yes, fair enough. But the theme of Vayechulu is that God created the world on the seventh day. But, if you'll notice, there are a few words that are highlighted that are all in past tense. You know, this is our classic understanding of Psukim. All in past tense, Vayechulu, like God finished, past tense, Vayechal, the past tense, that all the things that he'd been doing, Asher Asa, all past tense. What's that last word, though? Asher Bara Elokim, La'asos. La'asos, says Rav Nevin Sal, is an active word. It's actually a future tense. All the things that God was going to do. God finished everything that he was going to do. So this is maybe like a future perfect, or I don't really understand English, that level of English. Rabbi Danan, the Israeli that was with us last year, would sometimes ask grammatical questions to us, and we'd be like, I don't know. I've got no idea.
So, when we say that, and you have bracketed...
Yeah, that he had done. That is a bad translation, says Rav Nevinson.
He had done that thus far.
Right. So Rav Nevinson suggesting...
With the omission
exactly.
of fire...
Yes.
...which had not yet been done...
Precisely.
Until the following 7 days had passed.
Yes.
Until the next Shabbos.
Right. And Rav Nevinson makes a beautiful point that I didn't put in here, but that's really the crux of this, and why Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to answer our initial question of why Saturday night. This translation of that he had done is the common translation, the normative translation, but Rav Nevinson says it's not accurate. Rav Nevinson is a grammarian. If you look at his Sfarim, it says Rav Avigdor, and there's a little dot on top of the Dalet to indicate that it's not Rav Avigdar, it's Avigdor Nevinson. He's just very into grammar, and he has some beautiful Divrei Torah based on grammar. One of them is this, Asher bara Elokim la'asos. La'asos is future tense, things God was going to create. God rested from all the things that he had created in the past 6 days, and rested from any more creation that he would do. What's the one more creation he's going to make? Fire. Now, he takes it one step further. Why wait? Oh, hold on.
I was just going to say that I think what Brian said, that from the way you were describing it before, you can't rest from doing something until you've already done it. So therefore, I think the translation of Lao Tzu, what he had already done, would fit in, because that first Shabbos, the Shvisa, was only from things he had done, not from fire. He hadn't done that yet.
Fair enough.
So then when you use right. other... But when you say grammatically that's not correct, then how does Rav Nebenzahl's view fit in? Because now you're saying that even on the first Shabbos, he rested or refrained or
right.
limited himself from something that he was yet to do, so that even on the first Shabbos, he was resting from fire, which would mean that fire is no different than any of the other halachos, because there was a limiting, resting, refraining, whatever. From the...
Okay, I think if I understand you correctly, I'm going to try and say it over in 10 seconds, that the language of Lao Tzu implies that God rested from doing an activity, but you can't rest from doing something until you've actually done it. This is where Rav Nebenzahl's ultimate point. Why wait? Why wait to create fire Friday night, Saturday night? It wasn't just so that there'd be an interesting machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rav Nassan. God waited to create fire on Saturday night to indicate that Shabbos was on purpose. That Shabbos was deliberate. Shabbos is also part of creation, which I think helps us understand what you're pointing out, Vern, that God said, I'm going to do everything except one final thing. You know, like Lamashal, you like move into a house or an apartment that was just redone, and like the whole thing's done except the sockets haven't been put in yet. So it's like almost done. You could stay there for Shabbos if you need to, but no one will tell you that if the electrical sockets aren't in yet, no one's going to tell you that the house is done yet. God said, I'm leaving the electrical sockets. Because I don't want people to understand that Shabbos is a deliberate part of creation. I'm not creating the world in 6 days and stopping because I finished. I'm creating the world resting on the seventh, and then I'm going to finish. That exact moment right when Shabbos ends, and that's going to be the end of my creating, so that people understand that Shabbos is very, very much on purpose. That we're not supposed to have a six-day work week and then start another six-day work week. We're not supposed to have an eight-day work week. We're supposed to have 6 days of work and 1 day of rest. So this God rested from all the things that he was going to create that he had created. He even rested from the one thing that was left on his agenda. All the things were checked off except that last one of creating fire to show us that Shabbos was deliberate. Shabbos was on purpose. You with me?
That Shabbos was not an accident right. because he was finished.
Right. Precisely.
It wasn't he was finished and so he rested.
Right. It wasn't, oh, okay, I've got nothing else to do. I guess I'm not going to do anything else. No. I got one more thing. This day I'm taking off on purpose. That's Rav Nebenzahl, why God waits to create fire on Motzai Shabbos. Now I want to introduce you to another idea that I find fascinating and very exciting. The last piece, the 36 Hours of Light, is from the Yalkut Shimoni, is pointed out by Rav Nebenzahl, but I think it actually supports our next answer to our question of why wait till Saturday night. Because this next source tells us that, from a more practical sense, Rav Nebenzahl is going to prove why did God create fire on Motzai Shabbos? Because he didn't need fire until Motzai Shabbos. It wasn't necessary. Because each and every day of creation, we say, Vayir Vayivoker Yom Echad, Vayir Vayivoker Yom Sheni, na 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 na. I'm always tempted this Shabbos to like start singing, because you're just used to it. But we say each and every day of creation, it was evening, was morning, or it was evening, was daytime. That day, day two, day three, v'chulet. But when Shabbos comes, do we see that? Shabbos comes, there's no Vayir Vayivoker, just Vayakulu, and that's it. That's the full description of Shabbos. No evening, no morning. So what does Yalkut Shimoni say? Vayir Vayivoker, and now in the bold, or whatever you'd call this, Yom HaShabbos, Ein Ksivi Mo Erev. There's no Erev there. Amar Levi, B'Shem Rabbi Nazira, Lamed Vav Sha'os Hayayom. It was a 36-hour day. Shnei Masar Shel Erev Shabbos, Friday had 12 hours of light. V'Shnei Masar Shel Leil Shabbos, and Friday night for 12 hours had light. Ushneimasar shel Shabbos, and Saturday had 12 hours of light. Once in a while, you know, you forget Erev Shabbos, and the light's still on in your bedroom, and you're in trouble. You don't know what you're going to do. That's what Adam and Chava were dealing with that first Shabbos. The lights were left on. It was light for 36 hours. So says Rav Nebenzahl, Pashut, there was no need to have fire because it was always light out. It was always light in the garden. On a deeper sense, and more mystically.
Why would Tuesday night and Wednesday night if it's dark?
So why Vayera Voker? The garden. So it was light in the Garden of Eden, and this gets a little bit more Kabbalistic, if you will. But you know, where does light come from? It doesn't come from fluorescent bulbs. It doesn't come from the sun. Light comes from Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kodesh Baruch Hu is the source of ore, of light. And so once the Garden of Eden was created, then God said, I'm going to hang out here. I'm going to put my Shekhinah here. It's going to be light in here. But that didn't exist necessarily in the other days. Kodesh Baruch Hu's Shekhinah wasn't resting. There was no Ki'ilu, Mishkan-like Vishachanti V'Solcham happening until the Garden of Eden was around. Which is a whole fascinating thing, that the Beis HaMikdash was always illuminated. That was a shiur we talked about. Well, not we, but I talked about on Sukkos. Maybe next year we'll chop a Sukkos shiur, although that's not so easy. But so it was light for 36 hours. But why? So yeah, God was there. But let's explore this for a moment. There's a fascinating Sikta Rabasi. It's a medrash about what God was doing that sixth day. And the theme of the medrash is that God spent the entire sixth day of creation thinking about Adam, thinking about the creation. So we're not going to go through all of them, but basically it goes through hour by hour. First hour, God's like, you know what, I think I want to create mankind. And then he talks to the angels, as we're familiar, Nasa Adam, and then he gathers up the dirt, brings them all together, forms them, you know, creates an animal, effectively, and then breathes life into the animal, and it welcomes them to the garden and says, eat all of this, don't eat that. They mess up toward the latter hours of the day, hour 10, they eat from the one of two trees they're not supposed to be eating from. Hour 11, God punishes them, and that's it. That's the end of the day, because hour 12 comes, and it ends. Now, I'm going to tell you about the first NCSY Shabbaton I went on. As I've mentioned many times, I worked for this youth organization called NCSY. It's a wonderful organization, and their tagline is inspiring the Jewish future. So my first Shabbaton, I'm young, excited from boy, I'm excited to inspire the Jewish future. And I'm going to go, and I'm planning on teaching Torah, and I'm going to inspire kids, and I'm going to talk to them about their lives and their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was so excited. But this is what most people are thinking about and feeling their first Shabbaton. So Friday night comes, and it's great, and it's wonderful, and we're singing, and we're dancing, we're having a good time. I'm having these wonderful, deep conversations, and then it's time for curfew. Everyone goes up to their rooms, and the guys are hanging out in their room, and we're being a little bit rowdy. And then we get in trouble for being too rowdy, and then one thing leads to another, and one of the guys who was in my room, who I had met 12 hours earlier, decides he doesn't want to be there anymore, packs his bag, and tries to leave. So he tries calling a cab. The cabs won't pick him up because he's not allowed to leave. He's on our Shabbaton. And basically tries walking. Eventually he gets arrested for abandoning the Shabbaton he's not supposed to, and we try sending him home, but for a much more elaborate story, we can't send him home. And so this young boy is stuck with us on the Shabbaton. He's already been kicked off for trying to leave and violating numerous rules. And I think getting arrested is not officially one of our rules, but understandable. We often joke in the kollel that our only job description is that we have to be at the kollel on time and we can't violate the law. Those are our two requirements as per our contract. All the other things we're doing because we're at tzaddikim, but the can't violate the law. And so one of our kollel members actually has an ordinance against him, but that's a separate conversation. But so I've got this kid who was kicked off, but we can't send him home. And so first thing in the morning, the head of the Shabbaton comes up to me and he says, you have a new job. You're going to watch this boy and make sure that nothing bad happens, but we can't get rid of him. So he spent the morning in his room, and so I just went back every hour, sort of check on him, make sure he has food, fine. And then he leaves. And I was like, is he allowed to leave his room? And they're like, well, I don't know, we've never done this before. We've never had someone on our Shabbaton who's not allowed to be on our Shabbaton anymore. And so he's around, he's hanging out, and I basically have to shadow him. So I'll be having a conversation and watching out of the corner of my eye that he's over there, and then all of a sudden he disappears. So I have to duck out and run and find him. It was an interesting first experience. The fact that I spent 5 years there in NCSY might be a fascinating psychological study about myself. But effectively, I was in trouble because I had this young boy who was stuck on our Shabbaton because I couldn't send him home on Shabbos. Lahavdil, although maybe not so much Lahavdil, Adam and Chava break the law, they get arrested, they get punished, they're told you're leaving the garden. And then it's Shabbos. And God's like, oh, okay, maybe I can't send them home on Shabbos. This won't end so well. So they stay in the garden for Shabbos. And so even though they have no right to be, and they're not really allowed in the Garden of Eden anymore, Adam and Chava are still in the garden over Shabbos. And so for that 36-hour period from when they're created, or really they were created much later on, they were created, I guess for all intents and purposes, hour 8. But for their whole lives, they're in the Garden of Eden until Motzai Shabbos. But then Motzai Shabbos comes. And they get kicked out of the garden. And there's also Gemara Pesachim, but I think that the description that in Bereishis Rabba is a little bit more elaborate and so beautiful. You can imagine the scene that the source of light comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's nighttime. And so, yeah, I guess the moon's out there a little bit, but remember, it's also the beginning of the month. Rosh Hashanah was Adam's birthday, and so the moon's not really around so much. There's not really light outside. They get kicked out of the garden, and there's a door with, and it's bursting with light, and it's dark everywhere, and the doors are closing, and the warmth from that light is starting to go away, and it's getting darker, and the doors close. And Adam and Chava look around, and it's dark everywhere, and it's cold. Maybe it's a little bit windy. And they'll turn to each other, and they say, oh no, we really messed up. This was a really bad move. And they're freaking out, and they're regretting their decision, because they're cold, and they're alone, and they're hungry, and they're definitely scared. And yeah, we'll read inside, it's worth it. And then in the second paragraph, Kevan Sheshaka Achal Motzai Shabbos Hiskel Achushach Mimashish Ba'unisyari Adam Rishon. They're scared. Source 4, 7. Shana Amar, and he quotes Tehillim, proving it, jumping down to the bolded on the third line. Ma'asa Kadosh Baruch Hu. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do when he sees his two creations alone and scared in the dark? Zimin lo shnei ra'afim ve'kishon zelazeh v'yatzamehen or uverachaleh. Takes two rocks, brings them together, rubs them together, and what happens when you rub two rocks together? Although most rocks, this doesn't work today. I've tried it. Fire. Fire. They get a spark, they get a fire. And Medrash points out, this is consistent with the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, that fire was created on Motzai Shabbos. But what's the Kadosh Baruch Hu doing? What's the Kadosh Baruch Hu saying? You're scared. You feel like you're alone. You're in the dark. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'm not going to abandon you. This fire is going to keep you warm. It's going to keep you safe. It's going to keep you fed. This fire is what's going to sustain you in this post-Gan Eden world that you're living in. And so every Motzai Shabbos, we light a fire remembering that first Motzai Shabbos, when maybe we're feeling a little bit alone, a little bit in the dark, a little bit cold. Maybe not physically, but maybe spiritually, maybe emotionally, maybe socially. Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm always going to have a fire lit for you. I'm always going to give you the ability to light a fire. And that's what we're doing in Havdalah. And this is actually machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai.
Why do we reflect our nails?
We'll get to that. Fear not. This is actually machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Because on the next page, page 4, this machlokas where Beis Shammai wants to say that the bracha we should be saying in Havdalah is Shebarim Ma'or Ha'ish, that God created the singular light of fire. And Beis Hillel wants to say, no, it's Borei Ma'or Ha'ish. It's actively creating the light of fire. Oh, I bolded the wrong thing. And what's this machlokas? The Vilna Gaon has a commentary on Seder Zeraim, on the Mishnayos, which people probably don't look at that often, but it's very exciting when it comes to Mishnayos Brachos, because that's the whole Gemara that talks about it. So the Vilna Gaon has a fascinating insight. Well, not fascinating, he has a beautifully put insight. Vilna Gaon says, what's the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? Because Beis Hillel is telling us that it's Borei Me'orei, actively creating multiple, versus Beis Shammai is saying Bara Ma'or, God created the light. As far as Beis Shammai is concerned, explains the Vilna Gaon, Beis Shammai is talking about every Friday night we remember the invention of fire. That one time thousands of years ago, it's 5,780 years ago, when Adam and Chava were alone and cold and in the dark, and God said, I'm going to give you fire. And we're basically saying thank you. We're remembering that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us fire. And the commentary say we look at our nails to actively use that fire. Not just that the fire should exist, because I don't need the fire per se, but as soon as I use the fire to illuminate my nails, why the nails exactly is a Kabbalistic thing we can talk about afterward, but I use it to, I have to be meshamish the or, I have to use it. And so And so I'm going to use the fire by looking at my hands from the light of that flame. But what's Base Hillel arguing then? What's Base Hillel coming from? Explains the villain Gon. God, we're not making a bracha over Barem Meor, that God created fire Saturday night thousands of years ago. We're saying Bore Meore, that God, you are actively creating fire even today. Even this Saturday night, you're still creating fire. That even now in my life, you're giving me fire. You're giving me the tools that I need to survive, to continue in the world, to sustain. And the Rav Soloveitchik, actually, we're not going to get to this point yet. We're going to skip the bottom of page 4. But that's the piece from the Vilna Gaon about the depth of this fire. We clear? Vern?
No.
Okay. And what?
Can you crystallize that again?
The dispute between the two?
Shammai is saying he created it, and Beit Hillel is saying he created it and continues to create it.
Yes, he continues to create fire, and not Meor, not the singular, created it, but creates them, creates the multiple wicks of fire. So in a halakhic sense, we take that to mean that you should have multiple wicks in your Havdalah candle. But what the Vilna Gaon is explaining to us is that it's not just that you should have multiple wicks. That's like a nice thing that we do. But really, it's that God created fire back then and is still creating fire for us today. Now, if Soloveitchik explains.
So it's a question of created and creating.
Yes. When we think about fire, when we think about the bracha of fire in the world, of giving us light, we wouldn't be able to see in this room. Sorry. We wouldn't be able to see in this room if not for fire. I don't know what's illuminating these, but you know, you get the idea. So are we thinking about fire as being a bracha that happened so many years ago? Or are we thinking about fire as being something that's actively providing us light, providing us warmth, providing us energy even today? That's the machlokas between them. And we say in Havdalah, Borei Me'orei Ha'ish, that you're actively still creating fire for me. You're actively still providing me with those things that I so desperately need. And it's just interesting if you think about it. This fire is a funny thing that exists in the world. Fire comes from nothing. You take two rocks together, and all of a sudden there are flames. You know, you take a match, and you know, a fire could take up a lot of space. Yes, we know that it needs fuel, but you take a match, and it's this big, and then you light a fire, and all of a sudden it's taking up more space in the world now. It's almost nothing, but it's still so deep. There's still so much in there. And Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's creating that creates that fire, as a gift, which is in stark contrast, as the new RCA Seder points out, to the Greek mythological approach to fire. Because what does Greek mythology tell us? That Prometheus loved the people, he created the people, and he loved the people, and the gods wanted to rule over them. So the gods said, we want to hold on to fire so that we can be their masters, so that they rely on us, so that they need us. And Prometheus says, no, I'm not okay with that. I want the people to be safe and secure and to be okay. So he steals fire from the gods on Mount Olympus, comes down, and gives it to the people. But fire had to be stolen. It's an energy, it's a gift, a treasure of the gods that doesn't belong to people. Whereas what does the Torah tell us? Kadosh Baruch Hu gave fire as a gift because he cares about us. It's a beautiful contrast. And we're going to see that elaborate a little bit more in the context of a partnership. We're going to basically skip page 5. It's beautiful stuff here. You're welcome to check it out. But I was overzealous in my sourcing, although just because the Bracious is just too good. And so we jump to page 6. And page 6 is a very different kind of approach, but we're going to connect it. You'll see at the end. There are all these different names that we have for Kadosh Baruch Hu. We know that there's Kel Shakai, and there's Hashem Tzvakos, and Moshe is going to meet Ekya. There are all these different ones that we talk about. But what are the two big names of God? We say Elohim and Hashem. Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Tetragrammaton. It's a fun word to say. But, you know, the Yud Hei followed by the Vav Hei. And we're, as we're likely familiar, the Elohim represents Din, judgment, whereas as Hashem represents Rachamim, mercy. And so this is a Torah learning 101. There's only one name of God used in creation. Which name is that? That of Elohim, of judgment. And then later on in the second chapter, we're introduced to Hashem Yudkei Vavkei, that name of mercy. And as the Chizkuni pointed out, and basically everyone points out, that's a contrast between God started the world with judgment and then introduced the concept of mercy once people are around, once realizing that the world can't sustain just judgment. And we learned about that a little bit last year in our Shir about Yira, in and around Parshas Pekudei. But what if there's another way of looking at it? Because I initially saw this from Rabbi Sachs, but the Kuzari has a fascinating approach that maybe you guys have heard before. I had seen it for the first time this year, and it's so cool and so insightful. Kuzari says that Hashem is not Rachamim and Elohim is not Din, but instead it's like this. We're going to look at this inside. I'm going to read the Hebrew quickly, and then we'll translate a little bit slowly, but feel free to follow along. Omar Chaver, the rabbi, is talking to the Kuzar king without all the introduction of the Sefer Kuzari, and he says, Elohim, this name Elohim, Tor Lemoshel B'davar Min Advarim. This is referring to the overall ruler of things, Ula Dayan Shelo, and the master, the judge of those things, V'Sheyesh Yeh B'Kol Keshehu Rotsu Olam Kulo. My apologies. The Kuzari says, what is Elohim representing? Well, what does the word El mean? The word El means power. And we'll refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu as being a powerful God. God with that word El, I mean, we say El Tzvakos, that's a name of power. And so that first part of the word Elohim, El, means power, but Michamocha Be'elim Hashem, who's like you in the powers that exist in the world, explains the Kuzari, El is not necessarily referring to our God. In a pagan world, there were all of these gods that are around, all these powers, all these that existed in the world, many, many kokos that existed. And so the sun might be a god, and the moon might be a god, and the wind, and the water, the Nile might be a god. There are tons of gods around. If anyone remembers from the stand-up philosopher from History of the World, Part 1, Mel Brooks is describing how poor Christians are in contrast to the Greeks, because you know, the Greeks, we've got a god for this and a god for that, but the Christians, they're so poor, they only have one god. And so the Christians stole that idea from the Jewish people, but we're saying that, no, the sun's not a god, the moon's not a god, there's only one god. There's one Baal HaKokos Kulam. There's one power that exists over all of them. That power is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is our God, the creator of the world, creator and master of the world. So when we say Elohim, that is a title of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That is, you control everything. It's not so different than the description of Din, which is why they both exist. But we're clear that Elohim, as far as the Kuzari is explaining to us, is that you are the Baal HaKokos Kulam, you control it all. But in that case, what does Hashem mean? Now this is so cool. If we imagine that Elohim is a title, so if you will, Mr. President, you refer to George Washington, our first president of the United States, you might say, Mr. President, you know, President Washington, Mr. Washington, but you're always going to address the President of the United States by his title, by something formal. And when we talk to Kadosh Baruch Hu, when Kadosh Baruch Hu is interacting with the world as the I am the master of all, then he is Mr. President, President Washington, official. But what is the name Hashem? Hashem is God's first name. When I'm talking to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and calling him Hashem, it's not President Washington, it's not Mr. President, it's George. On a first name basis. And so when we meet a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when we talk to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're saying Hashem, we're talking to our Father in Heaven. It's not his title, it's not a descriptor about him. We're talking to him directly. Now that's something I never thought about before. Rabbi Sachs in Kevin in Conversation 5768 talks about this, and he has beautiful prose on the ramifications of this.
The seed, the yud k and the red k, is its first name. When we pronounce it,
right,
Abdus, so, that's the title. But that's,
right.
But then we don't use that.
So very, very interesting that you point out that, okay, God, you know, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei might be God's first name, but we actually don't do that. We actually still call him, the Lashon of Adnus is my master. And so the only time that we actually do use that name is when we're in the Beis HaMikdash. Birkas Kohanim is not Yivarech HaShem V'Yishmerech in the Beis HaMikdash. It's Yivarech Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, but announced explicitly in the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously on Yom Kippur, Vakohanim, and everyone falls. That's when it's announced explicitly. When you're in God's house, yeah, I think the way Gemara describes it, I might be adapting a little bit, but when you're out in the world, and this happens a lot in the Kolo, it's like a funny thing, there are 8 of us, and so Rebbe Brand is still Rebbe Brand, and Rebbe Kraft is still Rebbe Kraft, because they're holy and smart and older than us, but I call Rebbe Myers Yehuda, because he's my friend. So I call him Yehuda, but then when we're outside of the Kolo, we refer to him as Rabbi Myers, because we're outside of the Kolo. When you're outside of God's house, you're going to call him something that represents his title, that's talking about him, at, you know, Rabbi Myers, Mr. Washington, Elohim, or even not Hashem, but Adnus, my master. But when you're in God's house, when you're at home, it's just the two of you. When you can be informal, you take your shoes off, then you can use the first name. So that's sort of the idea about why there's a difference between the Medina and Medina versus the Beis HaMikdash. But so I encountered this idea, and it was very, very cool, very, very exciting. But let me ask you this question. When do we first meet Yud-Kei Vav-Kei? When do we first meet Kadosh Baruch Hu? So 2-4, I actually made a chart on the last page because I was looking into this, and it's fascinating stuff. We actually meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being this person of seemingly rachamim, of mercy, right after creation. Right after Vayahulu, we meet Hashem Elohim. I weren't going to look at all of it, but this is helpful. This is good. But he's not Hashem. Now it's George Washington, Hashem Elohim. We have the title and we have the first name. But that's not close. There's no closest when you refer to someone by their full name. That's like a weird thing to do. And so, when is the first time that we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu being referred to by just his first name? That closeness of a creator and their creation, of a father and a child, although parents and children, we don't use their first names. We see with Chava, that line right in the middle. Adam yadas Chava, Chav ishto. Adam knew his wife Chava, and biblically knew. They really knew each other. Vatahar, and she became pregnant. Vatelid, as Cain, and she gave birth to her son, Vatomer. And then Chava says, Kanisi ish es Hashem, at Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The first time in all of human history that we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, as being Hashem, that we see God's first name being referenced by humans, by his, God's creations, is after they've been kicked out of the garden, after they've been punished. After God, they're not living there anymore. They don't see God all over the place. God's not illuminating their lives. And you would think that they would never refer to God as Hashem anymore. God he's the master. He's the punisher. He's the person who kicked us out. We had a great thing going for us, and everything fell apart. And it's a little bit his fault because, you know, as Adam points out, although it's a terrible argument, God gave him Chava, and Chava is the reason why the apple happened, the Eitz HaDaas happened, not the apple probably, but why the Eitz HaDaas happened. And so really it's God's fault. God's the one who really made this all happen. He told the snake to do it. We shouldn't be referring to God by Yud-Kivet, by our first name. He is Mr. God, Mr. Elohim. There's a distance because I don't feel so close with him. So when does that change? Why is Chava calling him Hashem? Why is Chava using his first name? I think it's because of Havdalah. I think it's because of Saturday night. Because, yes, they get kicked out. And this probably wasn't a conversation that took place. And with all kavod to Adam and Chava and Kadosh Baruch Hu, I could imagine that Adam and Chava, when they're in the cold and the dark and they're scared and they're freaking out, they're like, oh, that God he's the worst. And there are only 3 of them, so one of them has to be the worst, and the 2 of them are in the conversation. Mimela, he's the worst. They're like, oh, can't believe he kicked us out. That was so not cool. I don't like him. I don't want to talk to him anymore. And then God shows up, and he says, you guys are cold, You guys are scared? You're in the dark? Don't worry, I'll take care of you. I'm going to give you fire. I'm going to keep you warm. I'm going to keep you safe. I still care about you. I still want to know you. I still want to have a relationship with you. And they say... And they say, he's not Elohim. He's not Mr. President. He's not the Din. He's Hashem. He wants a relationship with me. A first name basis. So we're going to be on a first name basis. We'll take that idea one step further. Well, that's really what I want to leave you with. The very first thing we do on Motzei Shabbos, the first malacha that we do, hopefully, assuming we're not driving home, although maybe not, is we light a fire. The very, very first thing, each and every single week, after 25 hours of rest, is that we do the same thing that God did. We light a fire. And Rav Soloveitchik points out that it's in the bottom of page 6, that God is, that when God teaches Adam and Chava to make fire, because there was a machlokas between the Rabbi Brand and myself as to how to read the Gemara, whether God took the two rocks and rubbed them together to make fire, or God showed Adam how to do it. But it's clear that regardless of whether God was doing himself or Adam did it, Adam did it every other time. And so God teaches Adam how to harness fire, how to use the world to be creative. And so the very, very first time that... So God gives fire to Adam. Adam says, "Hi, I'm Hashem, my first name. I'm Yudkei Vavkei, and I want you to be a partner with me. I don't want to be a creator and subject. I want you to also be a creator." So the very first thing we do on Shabbos is that we also create. God gave us the power, the tools, to create alongside him, to be a partner in creation. Keeping Shabbos is a partner in creation, but really keeping Shabbos is only a partner in creation if we're also creating. Someone who's a Nevach their whole lives and never does anything productive is not resting on Shabbos. You have to create for 6 days. So God gives us fire, and we light a fire on Motzei Shabbos in Havdalah to create as well. To say, "God, I don't want you to be Elohim. I don't want you to be a title." I just thought of this. I don't know if it's consistent. But think about our references to a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the paragraph before Havdalah. Hinei Kel Yeshu Efti, referring to God as Kel, as a title. We see Hashem many times, but I think it's always followed by a title. Hashem Tzvakos. First name, last name. We want to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being a creator, because if you're a creator and I'm a creator, you might be a much better creator. You're the top of the world. I'm like a small business owner. But if we're both business owners, we can be on a first name basis. We're companions to some extent. God's saying, "I want you to feel comfortable coming to me on a first name basis. I want you to call me Yudkei Vavkei. So you're also going to create." That's all the time we have. There's more that I want to say, because we could talk about this parsha forever. But I hope that this was interesting. I hope that was gave you food for thought. Maybe you can share something at the Shabbos table. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.